My name is Jason Doldane, and I'm the host of Reaching Roots, a podcast with a goal to make life easier for parents and families so they can reach further. We're talking to people who inspire us with their journey, tell us about the problems they are solving, and provide us insight that helps us and our children learn and grow. Joy and her husband, Rod, made it their life's mission in adopting harder-to-place children. With three biological sons, they adopted 10 abandoned and abused babies and toddlers of various ethnic backgrounds from 2 weeks to 4 years old. Joy Van Duren is the author of a children's book, Giselle's Silly, Soggy Day. The message she tries to get across is that all types of people, no matter their skin color or where they live or how they look, can work together for a common cause. The story is based on a real incident that happened to Giselle, a sheep that lived on Joy's farm, that fell through a bridge into a rushing creek during a rainstorm. She believes that people can put their differences aside and turn them into strengths to help each other, a lesson played out by animals in her book. Unable to drive or bus her 12 kids around for a year after a grand mal seizure in 1996, Joy suffered from severe depression. Though, even in this time of despair, she found strength in helping a stray injured bunny recover that led her to become a licensed animal rehabber to help wild, abandoned, and injured animals. In this episode, we talk to Joy about raising 13 children, her experiences bringing people and animals together from different walks of life, and how we can achieve greater good from all of this. Hey, welcome, Joy.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So Joy, tell us a little bit about, how you sort of got to doing what you're doing now and how you got to sort of write that book.
Well, the way that it all started was with the book is that our sheep Giselle, she got out into the rainstorm, and it was very typical of her to do that because she all the time would come and go and walk out in the rain with the horses and all that. And then my son came in and said, Giselle's not getting up. I can't get her to eat, and I don't know what her problem is. And I said, okay, well, she lay down. It's not a big deal. So it's okay. They lay down. It's not a problem. The next night, he told me the same thing. And I thought, well, something's up here. So I went and went on outside to check and see what the issue was. And I thought, this is really weird how she's acting. She acts like she's hungry, and I don't know what the problem is. So I put some food in my hand, and she started eating right out of my hand. I thought, no, she's hungry. So I don't get this. So I called my husband, Rod, and he said, no, go ahead and call the vet out and see. So we had the vet come out, and he came and he looked at her and he says, the only thing wrong with her is that she got out in this rain and she is so big and so fluffy anyway. She lay down and she can't get back up. And the only way that you're going to save her is by cutting all this fleece off. So maybe this much at a time off of her. And it was a cold day and it was rainy, and it literally took us into the nighttime to where Rod had to go get flashlights and big old lights and put them in the barn and shine them in there. And we continue cutting her and getting the stuff up. And then the whole thing was to get her up on her side. And we got her up on her side. And the whole thing, we had to get her up on her feet. So the vet said, leave her like that in the morning, try to get her up. So as we were cutting it, I thought, no one is going to believe this. Like, how does this happen, right? Like, how does this happen? And I thought, this would be the best book.
Okay. So, obviously, The story was really about your sheep being too heavy, I guess, from the water, right? And you had to dry her off for shear and stuff like that. But really, when you wrote the book, it seems like you took a different angle where you actually got all the animals to help kind of save her.
Right. Because we wanted, it's like, you know, the book was, the real story was, she filled up with water and she could not get up. We couldn't get her up. She would have died. So we had to get her up. And, you know, we did get her up the next day and she lived for 3 more years. And then we had to take a turn. We thought, you know, we need to make this book be a purpose and have a reason for it. Right. And be able to gear to children that they understand at a young age, because everything starts at a very young age to start to learn.
So what's the core message that you were really trying to get across?
The core message is friendship, to that you can get along together, to help each other out, to come together as a unit, that when people work together, or in this case, animals, because children love animals, but when you work together, you can get the job done. Like, you could do it if people just set aside their differences and focus on what they have in common, not what they don't have in common.
Talk about sort of your family. So you've got a family of 13, which is just like a big number.
Yes.
So tell me about how that came about.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so my husband and I have known each other since junior high. So we've been married 47 years and known each other 52. And so right out of high school, we got married. And then about 2 years later, we had our first son. And then we had 2 more boys. And then we decided that we would have, you know, chances of having a little girl, like, you know, whatever. And I saw a magazine at a friend's house, and it was about adoption. I knew very, very, very little about adoption. But I got very, very interested and very curious about it. And there were, at that time, it was adopting children from Korea was a really big thing. And that was like 36 years ago. A lot of children are getting adopted out of South Korea. And so we just kind of fell into that and doing that and really interested. And so our first daughter was from South Korea. Then we decided she needed a sister. And our second daughter is from South Korea. My husband went there to go get her and escort her home. He wanted to know about the country she came from and wanted to see with his own eyes. And it was quite an experience. I stayed home with the kids. And then after that, these were children that were harder to place because of medical reasons, or some of them have emotional issues, some are drug babies. I mean, there's a lot of different things, that spectrum of special needs, that umbrella is so huge. It goes from having literally birthmarks to not having the center of their brain. So there's a very large spectrum of that. And it's like, we got these children very quick just because we were willing to open up and listen to what the situation was.
Right.
And you find out that sometimes, you know, you don't think you could handle something and it's not that much. Well, once that word gets out into the adoption world, now I'm talking about years ago, I really don't know how it is now. It kind of goes like wildfire and it spreads, and you start getting agencies were calling us and asking us if we would adopt.
Right.
A particular child.
Okay.
And so it just kind of grew. So it was 3 boys, 3 girls, then 3 more boys, then another girl, then 3 more boys.
So, I mean, why did you continue doing it? I mean, why not just stop at the 2 that you adopted at the first place?
I don't know. The only people have asked us that. And some people say, would you just don't turn down anybody? Well, that's not true. We have, because if the fit's not right and it's not something you're able to handle or fit into, you're not going to just say yes. So it's something you really have to, you know, put your heart into and really think about. So the only thing either one of Rod or I could ever come up with is that it was our mission, that this was the mission that God has given us to do. Right. Because it wasn't like people thought, and they verbalized it to me, that, you know, you just want babies all the time. Well, that was not the case whatsoever. Babies grow up. So that was not the case. It was a desire. It was in the heart desire that was there. And after our last child, after we got him, he was 4 and we adopted him, the desire just left. Like, it was just gone. And so.
Okay, interesting.
Yes.
It was, after number 13.
Yes. It was just like that desire was just gone. It just went away.
Okay. So tell me about, you know, what were some of the sort of challenges or, you know, like some of the positives of like assimilating this kind of family?
Well, when we adopted our first daughter, they actually had a seminar, and the seminar was to let you know, you are going to run into circumstances that people aren't going to be happy that you have a different race child. Our kids are all different races. They're African American, they're biracial, Hispanic,
right.
Korean,
right.
Italian.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And white. No, so you absolutely run into circumstances that people have a hard time with this. And along with that, you learn to become strong. Because you're defending your family, and you're teaching your children the right way, or trying to teach your children the right way of handling these type of circumstances that you are going to have throughout your entire life. Because I would always say to him, people don't have families like ours. And they had a really hard time understanding that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, obviously the complexity of having an interracial set of siblings, right?
Right.
Is going to be fairly confusing, I would think, for children, especially, I guess, growing up in Texas, right? That's where you guys are.
Right, right. Yes.
So, I mean, how did you deal with some of that? And, I mean, were there any instances where it just got really difficult?
There were some instances, and, One of our kids, he's now all grown up and has a child of his own. When he was in elementary school, he kept on getting kicked. And our children were, at the time, the only minority children in the school district. So it was different for teachers and kids and everything else. And our son was getting bullied in the bathroom. He was getting pushed and he was getting kicked and he was getting, you know, all this different stuff happening to him. And when when the teacher came in, she saw our child push the other one and he automatically got in trouble. So I tried to explain this in the ARD meeting and they said, well, you know, he shouldn't have been hitting back. And I said, no. You know, you didn't see the full story here. So there's a lot of things like that. There are lots of racial slurs that you have to teach your kids that you're going to come across this. And the best thing for you to do is really try to walk away from it. Like, really just let it roll off your back and just keep on going, because you're the bigger person in this situation. But they have to know that they're going to face this. When our boys started dating, they would date white girls, and the girls' parents were not happy about it, and they just could not understand why. And one of our sons said, you know, it took me like 3 times. I like to meet the parents after at least the 3rd date, and she wouldn't let me meet her parents. And he said, I kind of picked up on that after a little while, and he said, you know, I said, you know, this isn't going to work if I can't meet your parents and they can't be okay with me. So there's a lot of different situations like that you deal with.
Yeah, you can imagine. And how was the relationship between the children themselves?
Oh, they kind of piled up. Like, sometimes there were 2 or 3 piled together. our youngest daughter, two of her older brothers, at nighttime, they would go in her room and they'd have this little powwow going on, you know, like when they're in their mid later teens, and they would go out and eat and all this kind of stuff. So they seem to kind of pow up, like two together or three together, something like that. And they did very, very well. You got a lot of different personalities. They do not have the same DNA. You know, right. You have a lot of conflicting things that, you know, they managed to work through a lot of different situations with themselves, or they just fought, you know, kids fight, and they'd fight, and they'd get over it, and they'd be best buddies again.
Yeah, and so what are they all doing now? I'm assuming they're all fairly grown up at this point.
Oh, yeah, they're all grown up. I mean, our oldest son is 45, and they're UPS drivers and FedEx, and they have families, and they've done really wonderful for themselves. We're very
having 13 children. I mean, there's a financial consideration to this also. I mean, you know, it's not cheap raising even one child, let alone 13. So how did you manage that?
Well, we had a one family income because in our opinion, that's how you do it. Like, someone has to stay home with the kids. And it took a lot of sacrificing. We didn't go out to dinner. We didn't go on vacations. We didn't, as far as Rod and I ourselves, we didn't do, honestly didn't do anything. The first time we spent the night somewhere, like over just one night, overnight, his brother came and stayed with the kids. And we had been married 22 years. So it was the first time in 22 years that we went someplace like one night overnight. So it's sacrificing is what it is. Meals were ridiculous, you know, big pots of soup. And now I'll be real honest with you. There were times when we'd sit at the table and I'd look at the table and I'd think, ugh, I don't know if we're going to stretch. No, if there's quite enough. And I would honestly just say, I'm not very hungry today. And I'm just going to have something to drink or something like that, because we didn't want them to ever feel like there wasn't enough food. There was a lot of food. I mean, there's absolutely a lot of food. I made one of my kids say, I hate the word casserole to this day, because everything came in casserole form, soup form. I mean, you're talking, 8 pound meatloaves, just huge amounts of food. And they just ate a lot. There's, nine boys. And they ate a lot. And you just try to accommodate. And it was just like, there were times when we'd have to tell them, as far as food wise, this is it for the week. So when you eat everything in the pantry, it's gone. That's it. But the bottom line of it is sacrifice. It's sacrificing to make it work. And I had some people ask me, who do you have come in and help you clean and stuff? And I go, what? Are you kidding? And so no. And they said, well, how about cooking or help with the kids? I said, no, that's my job. And my whole thing was, I kind of got a wind of what people think of people with large families. They think that that they're messy, and house is messy, and that they don't keep themselves up and all this kind of stuff. So my goal was, I am never gonna let anyone even think that of me, because so I worked really, really hard as far as 10 loads of laundry a day, but it became normal. It was a normal to me, not normal to other people, but it was a normal. It's kind of like I really didn't know any different.
I guess you believe it's an amazing accomplishment. You're proud of it.
Thank you. It takes, again, it's that teamwork. You got to work together as a team, whether it's husband and wife or the entire family. And many, many, many times it is the entire family has to come together. And we are all very, very different. As they grow up in adulthood, you see that even more.
Right. No, absolutely. And I saw your husband helping you with the Zoom call. So yes. You guys are still getting along.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yes.
That's great. That's great. Okay, Joy. So, you know, the other part of your story really is that, you know, you went through kind of a seizure, you lost your driver's license. And obviously when, you know, you can't bus your kids around, which, you know, becomes kind of a mandatory thing to really get our kids from one place to the other, you went through a little bit of depression there. And then that led you to sort of do good for injured animals and then take care and assimilate various different animals. So tell me about sort of that experience.
Yes, that was a very, very difficult time. Very difficult because I was used to up and going and doing things and getting things done. Well, I had a grand mal seizure and boy, that knocked me out. And it was extremely difficult. I honestly could not even think how to make a bowl of cereal. It was very difficult. And it took the doctor, he said, your hard part's going to be the medication. And that was, it was a very hard part to adjust to and get used to. And during that time, yes, depression did set in. I didn't even realize it. Like, I didn't know at that time, I know all about it now, you know, through our kids and everything, yeah, a lot of different people. But at that time, I didn't even know I was depressed. You know, I just thought, whatever. I was not allowed to drive for a year and I had no vehicle to drive, couldn't take the kids anywhere. The schools were very accommodating. They brought the armies and stuff to our home. But still with that, I had no connection to the outside world, which was very, very difficult. And I had found a little baby bunny. I mean, maybe 3 days old, maybe. And I tried to nurse it back to health, didn't know what to do. I contacted a rehabber and I was very, very interested. I love animals, love them. And she started talking to me and she says, no, you'd be really good at that. I said, are you kidding? You know how many kids I have? I can't do this. And she goes, sure you can. You can take like two at a time. Well, I started getting into that. And it was like a lifesaver because I was able to talk to people on the phone. People came and dropped animals off and it was great. And I did anything from little baby cottontail bunnies and squirrels. I did fawn, like little fawns and a beaver, raccoons, just so many different animals. My very, very favorite is the skunks. I love the skunks. They were great.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes. Wow. They are awesome little animals. I got them. They're about this big. And I started them on cat food and kitten milk. And they thought I was their mom. And they tap their feet. They just go tap, 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 like that when they see you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
I love doing that.
That's amazing. So, you've helped all these kids. You've helped all these animals. How is all this, like, if you look back in your life, how has all this kind of transformed you? Has it changed you in any way?
I think I've always kind of been like this, to be real honest with you. It's just that, like, as a child, I loved animals. I loved taking care of them. I always liked kids. My girls, even back in my day, were getting Barbie dolls. I wanted baby dolls, you know, all this kind of stuff. So I think it's always been in me, but I think it's made me be a stronger person. The kids have taught me so much because the backgrounds where some of them have come from or where they've been, where they would, I get a little choked up, where they would be today if they didn't have a home to go to. And that is something that you just can't even put any kind of price on whatsoever. It's just like, it just makes you strong. But yeah, there's been some difficult times. We've had some hard, hard times, but through those hard times, you learn lessons. And one thing that I learned that when a child does, when they do something, let's say something that's not a good something, you take that not good something, whatever it may be, you let it turn into a learning experience to where they learn from that. not, it doesn't necessarily have to turn bad good, but learn from that experience. So,
So, Joy, is there one feeling that you have as a mom that you would rather not feel?
Why do you ask me this? sometimes, believe it or not, I feel lonely. There's times I feel lonely because sometimes you get in, you're in situations with your kids that other people don't understand and they don't get. And so they kind of cast you out. And even though you have people all around you, there's still a sense of loneliness. And so it's kind of, for me, my best friends are my family. That's who my best friends are. I'd say that's probably a very difficult thing. Like, I don't like feeling that at all. And it's just on occasions.
And is it just loneliness because you feel like no one really can understand your situation?
It's not so much anymore, except for sometimes situations hang on, you know, like people can't drop stuff. And there are situations that are very, very difficult to get. I mean, you've got abandoned, abused, neglect. I mean, things that kids act out and people don't understand that.
Yeah, you've got kind of a unique situation, right? And I'm sure that people look at it and say, you know, you've kind of brought this all to yourself in a way.
Exactly. And it's kind of like, yeah, but no, like you don't know. It's just like birth children. Like you don't, when you, with a birth child, you don't know. Our oldest son, he was born deaf in one ear. And then when he was 27, when he's diagnosed with cancer, which is a cancer he'll have his whole entire life. And it's like 1 in 1.5 million. And, you know, so you go through all kinds of different situations, just so many different things.
So, Joy, you've written this book, Giselle. What's kind of your hope for the people who pick this book up and read it?
Michelle and I have the hope that when people pick up Giselle, we wanted Giselle to be a happy, colorful, funny, we wanted kids to laugh and giggle. And one of our main things was, I want a three-year-old to be able to pick up, or we want a three-year-old to pick up the book, look at the pictures and kind of figure out what's going on here, kind of thing. And we hope that people will get from this, our children will get from this, that you can work together, have friends. They don't have to be just like you. They could be different, but if you take away your differences and look what you have that's the same, you can work together and you can make things right. And you could, you know, come up with a solution. And, you know, hopefully Giselle brings happiness and laughter and silliness to whoever may read it. Because it is based, it isn't a true story, but it is based on true events.
Got it. Where can they get the book?
Oh, you can purchase the book through Amazon.
Okay, got it. And we'll put a link to the book in our show notes when we publish this also.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Joy. I appreciate your time today and you being here.
Thank you so much, Jason, for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun and it's been great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. We would really appreciate if you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or send us any feedback to reachingroots@wishslate.com. Also, download the Wish Slate app to help organize wish lists for your family and change the way you gift. You can download this from www.wishslate.com/download.